Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, welcome back to the show. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hey, Taylor, doing good. How you doing?
Just fine. It's a beautiful day out. Did you have anything good to drink this week?
Well, actually, we had a few different kinds of drinks. It was a regular party weekend.
Regular party weekend.
Yeah, I had to get a new bottle of Nonino. The last bottle just disappeared just like that.
Killing those paper planes.
I know, the paper planes. And then Riley likes that from the rooftop bar here, the recipe we got for an espresso martini that's made with the whipped vodka. Mm. So I made her those. And then I like the ones with the rum chata. So I was making myself those rum chata espresso, not really a martini.
That sounds delicious.
And then we did go out to eat, and I got to get me some Guinness on draft. So anytime you get Guinness on draft, I'll take it.
Wow. That's excellent.
How about you?
You know what? I actually had, I've worked all week, but I've been doing some R&D for some new menu suggestions. So I've been drinking a lot of inventions this week, which are fun. I'm excited about a few.
Oh, yeah?
But I think more exciting, my workplace, we've hired a couple people from Colombia, and I've gone out with them a few times, and I got to try, I keep asking them to tell me how to pronounce it, and then I pronounce it correctly when I say it back to them, and then my brain short circuits when I try to say it. Aguardiente. Yeah. Aguardiente. We've talked about it before, but it's another one of those anise flavored like spirits. So mm-hmm. I got to try some weird, some real aguardiente the other night, and that was very cool.
Well, now, is that one of those kind of drinks that you drink it kind of like a shot, but sip it?
Yeah. Well, we did it as shots, but yes, usually you sip it. And it's similar. It's like kind of in that same family of ouzo and arak and raki, like all of that. Like the not as sweet, not nearly as sweet as like a sambuca. It's a lot drier. It was really good. It's really mm-hmm. cool. A really good time.
Well, good. Well, you have to try mixing that with something, see what you can come up with.
Yeah, well, I was trying, you know, like with somebody shares their culture with you, you follow their lead and you do it the way they
sure.
do. So we were just
sipping it, but yeah, wait till you're on your own before you mess it up.
Yeah, I was like, I won't. I'm like, I have a great idea for a cocktail. Just drink your glass, Taylor. Shut up.
You know what? This would be good if you did this, and this to it.
Nope, it's good on its own.
Yeah. You don't want to say that.
Yeah. No, it's always so exciting. Like I don't know. It's one of my favorite things about working in restaurants. It's just like, if you aren't like taking advantage of like learning about your coworkers, I mean, especially in a city like New York City where everybody's from somewhere else, like, you know, you should be trying to learn about the people you work with. And there's so much to like, there's so much to unlock about each individual person, each individual coworker.
Sure.
There's so much cool stuff there. And I'm just really enjoying like, where are you from? What do you drink? Tell me about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're living in the melting pot.
Yeah. But you know, it's finally consistently warm, not too hot, or our shoes aren't melting to the pavement yet in New York City, but it is hot. So I feel like it is time for boat drinks. It's time for tiki drinks. It's time for those delicious summer beverages. I felt a craving for one this week, but I also don't really keep my home bar. My home bar is well stocked with liquors, but not like enough to like pull off a tiki drink mm-hmm. on the fly. 'Cause tiki drinks require a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah. And some weird stuff that you don't really use for anything else.
Exactly. And a lot of it's got an expiration date too. So it's hard to keep it's not hard to keep a well stocked home bar. It's hard to keep a well stocked home tiki bar.
Yeah.
But I wanted something kind of in that style, and I had a bottle of something called Velvet Falernum on my shelf. So I just, there was a recipe on the back back of the label for something called a cordon oil. So I made one up. It was delicious. But I thought that, hey, you know, we could talk about the cordon oil a little bit and that bottle itself, Velvet Falernum, because it's a little bit of an oddball. It's got some cool history to it. So I just thought we could get into it.
Well, Velvet Falernum is absolutely something I have never heard of, never even thought about. I mean, I would have no idea what it is.
Now, so you've never come across it before?
No, never come across it. Never even heard those two words put together in one sentence.
Well, for starters, it is delicious. I think that's the most important thing. So it can be, you know, you might see it as a non-alcoholic syrup. Like there are, you know, like coffee flavorings that'll be Falernum flavored. But historically it is an alcoholic ingredient. And the history, like a lot of cocktail ingredients, is a little muddied. We don't know exactly who first made it. Exactly. We know where it comes from though. And we know about when it started to be a thing. So that goes all the way back to the 1700s and it is from Barbados.
Barbados specifically, huh?
Yes. We know that much. And it was originally just commonly made at like sugar distilleries. So it was more of like the original Falernum was more of a punch and it would have been like a local recipe. So each distillery would have had their own recipe for Falernum. And while they basically all would have some rum, some lime and some sugar in them, and some sort of spices, those spices could really vary, and that would establish the sort of personal flavor of each recipe. So you would have, you know, you could have cloves, nutmeg, almonds, ginger, cinnamon, any combination of those to make that place's specific recipe for Falernum.
Well, all those things sound good to be mixed in a drink.
There's no bad combination there.
Yeah.
And the name is actually a little bit of a mystery too. Now the easy and probably the accurate origin of the name Falernum is, from the Latin word for wine, which is Falernum or Roman Falernium, but that seems to track that there is this word that's used for alcohol. It's the same word. It just at some time got attached to this rum punch. There is this more colorful story related to the name, though, and that was, we get that from a New York Times article in 1892, which is talking about the creation of Falernum, and they attribute the name to just a housewife in Barbados who was asked how she made her particular punch, and she just said, you have to learn them. Like, you have to figure it out for yourself, you know, you gotta find your own way.
You have to learn them.
Yeah. And I don't, I mean, that's, I like that story. It's cute. It's probably the first one, but the second one's cute too. So we'll tell it.
Yeah. that's a good one to tell. Just to, you know, put something out there.
It's for Falernum. Now we get a description of Falernum from a somewhat famous source, not Charles Dickens Sr., but Charles Dickens Jr., his Charles Dickens son. Who was a writer as well. He had a book, All the Year Round, and it was published in 1892. And he describes the Falernum, this like, before it was a bottled product, which is obviously what we see on the shelves now, it was just more of this punch of various ingredients. And he describes how it's made and how it's prepared. And it's interesting because he mentions that it could also often be made with wormwood or Angostura. So, you know, there's a lot of pet recipes on the internet. You'll occasionally see some absinthe in there, some wormwood. It's just, you know, tends more to the fact that it was an anything goes recipe for a while. But I do like the way he talks about it. He says that the result of all this, it's a frothy, cool, and most seductive draft, which taken in strict moderation seems to have a good tonic effect when the system is a little below par. The only difficulty is to get people to take it in moderation.
So, and he's talking about just drinking it straight, right?
Yeah.
Not as a drink, not as a mixed drink.
Well, and that's sort of the interesting thing is that the origin of Falernum was probably a thing you would just drink it on its own. It was a punch. But that switch where it becomes like a thicker, more viscous, syrupy, like specialty bottled product, that happens like the late 1800s, early 1900s. One of the most prominent brands, one of the biggest brands, the easiest to find today, which is John D. Taylor's. That starts like the story on their website, you know, they developed in like 1890, but it hits international shelves in 1920. So John D. Taylor's velvet flanum, and this is when we see the word velvet attached. The velvet is in relation to the high sugar content. So it's creamy because of all the sugar, kind of like our creme de whatever spirits, you know? Mm-hmm.
Makes me think of it being smooth.
Yeah.
When I hear that.
Well, it's smooth. It's a lot more sugar, and his recipe specifically focuses on almond, clove, and lime peel, but then also just a lot of sugar. So this is where it makes a transition from less of like a thing you could sip on its own and more of a cocktail ingredient. You know, it's meant to be mixed. It's not meant to be just sipped. Although you can sip it on the rocks. It's very, very sweet, but you know, some people.
It's a pretty low ABV, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 11%. Lower alcohol.
That's even lower than near beer. So I think.
Yeah. Well, no, that's like 3.5. I don't know about that. It's like a lower alcohol wine. It's like a white wine. So yeah, you would get drunk off of. Oh, don't do that. I was going to say, cause you could get drunk off a bottle of Falernum, but then you're imbibing so much sugar. That would be a horrible hangover.
Yeah.
We do not here at Neat the Booze Cast encourage you to drink an entire bottle of Velvet Falernum. Please don't.
Not even as an experiment.
No, not even once. But that this bottled version of Falernum becomes a popular ingredient in the early 1900s. You know, you have a lot of other brands popping up around this time. And, you know, the John D. Taylor one, it is made in Barbados, the R.L. Seal rum distillery. So it makes sense. You're distilling rum. You're making rum. Why not also make Falernum? Because Falernum has rum as the booze. And other brands pop up, encouraged by the tiki craze, which, of course, has its roots in the 30s. So tiki becomes a big thing, 30s, 40s, Velvet Falernum just gets tacked right along. A lot of tiki drinks include Falernum.
Hmm. Well, it's a very natural mix to put with rum, which is, I guess, what they did back in those days, especially being out of Barbados.
Yeah.
That would be the alcohol that would have been the most available and that they would have made at home and stuff like that. So I guess you add the rum and make it a higher ABV.
Well,
then you've got a nice little rum punch.
Yeah. Well, it's already got rum as like the base distillate anyway. And it's like Kahlua. Mm-hmm. Like Kahlua is rum based. So why does Kahlua work great with rum? Because there's rum in it. Simple. And I mean, even then when you look at the flavors, like it really is designed to complement the flavors that you find in rum, the cloves, mm-hmm. the sort of like, you know, the esters, the banana flavors, like all of those things you find in rum, you can complement with the flavors in Falernum.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, like a lot of classic cocktail ingredients, specifically in terms of Falernum, with the death of the tiki craze and just good bartending in general that happened in the 70s and 80s, Falernum stopped being imported. You couldn't find it on the shelves in America for a long time. And that really was brought back by the late 90s cocktail nerds going through old recipe books and going like, hey, I want to make this Bermuda, Royal Bermuda Yacht Club daiquiri, and I need Falernum for that. What's Falernum? So, you know, people, of course, tried to make their own and then eventually started importing the proper brand. That John D. Taylor never went away. It just started showing up on American shelves again, along with a lot of other brands. But that's really the one that's easiest to find.
Yeah, because a lot of those places, you know, they have that kind of local drink like that, and their production is mostly geared towards their own area or their own country or whatever like that. And you know, they export some, but that's not their major moneymaker. You know, I mean, that's not their major export is not what they're mostly in business for.
Absolutely. Well, and again, like it goes to that, it started off as just like, this is just a thing we offer locally. Like we just, you know, mm-hmm. we make it on site. You can have it on site. I'm gonna bottle mm-hmm. it and ship it. But those cocktail nerds, they made enough noise that it got back on the shelves. And now you could just find it at your decently well-stocked liquor store. I see it around at like, you know, there's like the two levels of spirits. I feel like in New York City, they're the ones I can find in Bushwick, and they're the ones that I can have to go into the city for. And I can find it in Bushwick, so that's saying something.
Well, that's good. I'll have to grab a bottle when we're up there.
Well, and you know, if you do want to try it out and you want something to do with it, I mentioned earlier that I tried the corn and oil, which it's kind of a I don't think it's an attractive name for a drink.
But it sounds intriguing to me. I mean, corn and oil, I don't know why, but to me that sounds like, I'd like to try that.
Well, it's a great drink to make if you want something that kind of is in like a boat drink, tiki drink kind of vibe, but you don't want to have to buy 10 bottles of stuff. Very basic. It's really just some aged rum, some bitters, Ango usually, some Falernum. So it's almost like a kind of like a rum old fashioned, I guess, but it's a lot lighter. And recipes vary. The way I was taught it was you throw a little, like you squeeze a lime in there, or you throw a couple limes in the bottom and give it a quick muddle. You want a little bit of lime juice, a little bit of lime oil in there, a little bit of peel. So it's a little bit brighter, it's a little zestier than like an old fashioned. It's a good, if you like stronger drinks, you're not a fan of shaken drinks, but you want something light and summery, it's a great option.
Is it a stirred drink?
It is. You can build it in the glass. You literally just ice in a rocks glass, a couple ounces of good rum, a little bit of like half ounce of Falernum, some dashes of Ango, little squeeze of lime juice, throw the lime in there, whatever, stir it, you're good to go. So really easy build. And it goes back, its history really goes right alongside with Falernum. So it dates back to the 1700s too. The name, I thought this was interesting. The name actually is a biblical reference.
Oh yeah. I was gonna say, I understand the oil. I mean, you know, you're getting the oil from the lime peel, but I didn't understand the corn part.
No, so it originated as like a planter's punch. So it was just like sort of like a lot of these things, like something that you would drink when you're out working all day in the heat. You know, it's alcohol, it's refreshing, yeah. It's you'd probably serve with a lot of ice. It's a lot of booze.
I was gonna say, I'm working out in the sun and hot, an alcoholic beverage is not what I think of. That's like when they show the commercials, these guys playing basketball outdoors, and then when they take a break, they all down a beer, and it's like, that's the last thing I want. I'll take a Gatorade anytime, but I'm not going to drink a beer in the middle of a basketball game.
I don't know. I feel like there's a precedent. There are a lot of cocktails that seem to come from this sort of this story. Like it was for farmers working in the field. It's like those were some drunk farmers, but good for them.
Yeah,
you know, that's a hard job. I think it's totally fine.
That was that Schwitzel or whatever, though, that vinegar based one. Though,
yeah, but there were alcohol ones too. Yeah, that's it. It was the Gatorade, the original Gatorade Schwitzel. I guess this is another original Gatorade, the corn and oil.
But the
name comes from the Old Testament of all places, and it refers to a sermon given by Moses. It says, he says like that, I will give you the rain of your land in his due season, the first rain and the latter rain, that thou mayest gather in thy corn and thy wine and thine oil. And he's not talking actually about corn and wine and oil. He's talking about peace and prosperity and, you know, abundance. So that's corn and oil kind of means peace and prosperity, prosperity and peace. Yeah.
Well, I never would have guessed that. I was trying to figure out where we put corn in that drink.
Yeah, no, it's a cool name. You don't get a lot of like biblically named cocktails. Religion and alcohol, well, I guess historically very friendly, but not in a modern sense.
Well, but I will tell you this, that if we were talking about, you know, building a menu a couple episodes back if that was on the menu as a name, that would certainly catch your eye and make you say, I wonder, that sounds interesting.
Well, I think it's a good one to have in your repertoire as your bar manager building menus, because it's got a cool name. And also it's hard to find a rum drink, like a stirred rum drink is a bit of an oddball, and a rum drink that's not like a daiquiri or mojito, that's simple, that's not going into tiki territory. That's a unique space. So I think it's a cool classic to bring out. It's good. You know, it's again, like, I think it needs that little bit of lime. You don't always see that included in menus, but I think it's needed. And it's a good one. And you know, to try to put a bow on all this, it is the recipe that's again featured on the back of that John D. Taylor Falernum bottle. So if you buy that very famous brand of Falernum, right on the back of the bottle, there's the recipe for the corn and oil.
Well, there you go. It's a drink that made Mel Famy walk us.
What?
That's a callback to an old joke.
What does that mean? You have to explain the beer that made things.
The beer that made Milwaukee famous. Have you ever heard of that before?
What?
That,
no.
That was a saying for a beer that I don't even think they'd make anymore. Old Milwaukee, Milwaukee famous. And there was a joke about a guy that was playing. He was a professional pitcher and his name was Mel Famy. And he liked to drink. He'd sneak drinks in the dugout, and one game went to extra innings and he had drank too much and he walked home the winning run and they lost. And the other team was cussing him and said, well, it was because he wouldn't quit drinking. And they said, hey, that's the beer that made Mel Famy walk us.
Oh. There you go. That's alcohol adjacent history.
There you go. I like to throw out the punchline without any reference to the actual joke.
I am aware.
It's just like when I can't get people to go back to work at the theater and stuff. And I'm like, all right, coffee break's over, back on your heads. So if you know that joke, then you know what I'm saying. If you don't, then you still get the idea. Well, I got to get back to work.
That's just how the origin of like the weird things, especially I feel like it's an Appalachian thing. You just say weird stuff and people are like, that must be just a thing people say.
Yeah, that's right. That's how that happens.
They originate with people like you that just decide to forego the whole explanation and just say things. Everyone goes, well, my brain works in a thing that they say.
Yeah, my brain works in weird ways. I hear something and it triggers something else completely unrelated. But in my mind, I just connected about five or six dots real fast and that made sense.
Then those get passed down because anytime somebody mentions meatloaf, I have to say, don't let your meatloaf. I don't know what I'm saying, but I know you say it.
That's right. We're not even talking about the singer.
What is that? What? Why? It's a thing. I have to, it's a cycle I have to complete. I can't. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I've done that to you all. You all have ones like that
It's
do.
Not just me. I know Sydney and Riley do it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, here's your new, you know, I don't know. I'm sure you can, the phrase corn and oil, now you know it means peace and prosperity. So if you just want to start wishing people corn and oil and not explain why, it's
a good, there you go. That's a good one too.
Corn and oil. That's a good toast.
They're living as if in corn and oil.
Corn and oil to you, bud. What?
Yeah, you're offering a toast at a wedding or something like that.
What do you think we got?
The corn and oil. Groom and the bride live forever in corn and oil. What?
Sounds.
What are we, popping popcorn?
Sounds gross. All right. Well, I hope you all pick up a bottle of Falernum and try it out. Also, it's just a great any drink that you usually use like a simple syrup in. You can use Falernum. It's a high sugar spirit, so like. It makes a great daiquiri, you know, use 3/4 of that instead of sugar syrup, try it in a sour build. It's great. So it's a very useful bottle. It's not expensive, fairly easy to find and make yourself a corn and oil. Have some peace and prosperity.
Well, that sounds like something that if you had that and you knew that you could substitute that for your simple syrup, but that sounds like something that you could really experiment with and, you know, tweak some things and stuff like that.
Yeah. And like obvious pairing is rum, but you know, works great with tequila, mezcal. I feel like you could swing it with a whiskey. I think that depending on the brand, but I think, you know, if you've got spices, ginger, those things work with whiskey. So, you know,
not that I have a bottle cause Emily didn't give us one, but it goes good with wayward spirits.
I bet it does too. I think a lot of things would go good with wayward spirits.
Yeah. I think that would work well.
Well, there you go. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Taylor, for having me. I learned about Velvet Falernum, which I had never heard of or ever said before. Yeah. I'd never said those words. I've said velvet. I watched an old movie called Blue Velvet, I think it was, but
yeah, well, not specific. You know, if you wanted to do that's a good name for a Velvet Falernum cocktail. Yeah. Maybe a Velvet. Yeah, there's something there because the Royal Bermuda Yacht Club has Curacao and Falernum in it, and you could use blue You could use blue curacao and velvet flarinum and make a blue velvet. And
there you go. There's an old song called Blue Velvet too. She wore blue velvet. I won't bore you with singing it. That would not turn out well. That'd be worse than my insane references to things.
They're just mysterious.
Disembodied punchlines.
Sometimes it's like an escape room. It's like, there's an answer here. I have to find it. You aren't going to give it to me. I just have to find it.
That's right.
All right. Well, thanks to all of you for listening. If you want to find us on the internet, we are Neat Boozecast on Instagram. We are neatthebozecast@gmail.com. Email us your questions, your comments. You can join our Patreon. If you want to help support us, thank you to our Patreon. You are the reason this podcast gets made. And if you want to go talk about your experience with Velvet Flarinum, you can do that.
Neat the Boozecast group page on Facebook. We've had lots of contributions here lately. Get to chime in on things, yeah.
All right, well, go there and do that. And thanks again. I have been Taylor Strom.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
me. Yeah. That's a good one. You can play that song in the background when you serve it.
That might get, I don't know about that. That's a whole concept restaurant.
It'd be a little bell ringer for them. So, when a lot of the places, like you ring the bell when somebody leaves a tip or something like that at some of those places or something, you could just have, you play that, and everybody's like, I want that drink that plays a song.
That actually is not that far fetched. There's a shot bar in Manhattan. I think it's called Barcelona Bar. And they have all these themed shots. They're all very silly and very sweet and not necessarily, it's a good time, it's not a good drink. But the shots come with, like, they'll give you props and sometimes they'll play music. Like, there's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle shot. So you get four shots and each one is colored like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And they give you, like, weapons to hold, and they play the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle song when you order the shot.
And you all fight with your little miniature weapons.
Yep, it's very fun. It's very fun. If you want to have a stupid good time and drink lots of questionable shots in New York City, I recommend Barcelona Bar.